Can you be able to sign the names of this?
Are we going to be working out the decision?
We have a new CS, it's called Free Conference CS.
Okay.
And that's what we're working from, and let's see, we have myself, Senator Stevens, Senator Hoffman is here, we have Representative Roachberg, Representative Olson, Representative Gardner, and Senator Bundy has also been under the weather, so I'm not sure if he'll be here. But basically, there are, looks to me like about six major issues that we need to cover, and I had a chance to talk with pretty much everyone. I'm sorry I haven't met with you, Roberta, but we'll go over those issues so you know what the concerns were from prior bills. Whitney, any comments you'd care to make, or Annette, to begin with?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Annette Kreitzer, Chief of Staff, Lieutenant Governor Lehman, if you would go ahead and, if it's your pleasure to adopt the Free Conference Committee substitute.
Does everyone have a copy of that in front of them?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move that we adopt the Free Conference Committee substitute for Senate Bill 3624LS0123/B, Kurtz 22806.
And thank you.
And I'll object for explanation.
Okay, thank you. So if we can go then to Annette, you're going to explain it.
Ms. Chairman, I am. I know you're anxious to get on with your day, and you may have lots more questions about the CS. I have had an opportunity to meet with all the members except Senator Hoffman, because his staff told me that Senator Hoffman was just fine.
Well, that's a matter of opinion.
I know. It's a really difficult.
Well, it looks great.
Let me just start with the reason for the request for powers. The Free Conference goes to Sections 4 and 5, which are the sections which criminalize behavior, unlawful interference of voting in the first and second degree. Section 4 speaks to unlawful interference of voting in the first degree. Section 5 with unlawful interference of voting in the second degree. And in the version that passed the House, there was an overly broad reference to AS 1520-081. And I had long thought about this, that this was problematic and needed to be fixed. And unfortunately, it didn't get fixed until after, or we're about to address getting it fixed after it had already passed the House. And so the reason for the powers of pre-conference is because the language that exists in your pre-conference committee substitute in Sections 4 and 5, which is very specific, does not exist in any previous version. So that's the reason for the powers of pre-conference. Would you like me to go through?
Well, thanks. Now, before we go on, so if we look at, there's a memo from Sarah Felix to you. Is that really goes into detail on
that is correct.
An explanation of
that is correct. And all the
first degree and second degree. Yeah.
That's correct. And all the members have a copy of that. That the Department of Law believed that it was important to be specific about what it is you're actually criminalizing.
Just to make sure everyone understands, any questions or concerns anyone has with what the memo has to say or the changes that you find in Section 4 and 5? Okay, thank you.
The second issue that we asked to be addressed in the conference committee substitute was the fact that at the same time House Bill 94 was going through the legislature, and since House Bill 94 passed and was signed by the governor, it is now law, and so we asked for all of those sections that referred to House Bill 94 be removed, and so that language is out of your pre-conference committee substitute. And
I think everyone got a copy of the bill to see what sections were taken out, so that should, and I think somebody had marked it all so we knew which sections were removed. Thank you. Any questions on
Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment your staff for doing a good job of making it clear.
And underlining. We're good at underlining. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Representative Roper. Yes.
The third issue, Mr. Chairman, and do the members, I think they have in their packets, the version that passed the House, which is House CS for CS, Senate Bill 36, Judiciary Amended House. You should have a highlighted version of that on page 3.
House CS for Senate Bill Number 36, Judiciary Amended House, right.
Correct, sir. Section 4, which is on page 3, which amends 1525-060-C.
This one.
Okay.
The first sentence was of that section was in House Bill 94, so that, of course, is out of the Free Conference Committee substitute.
So the first four lines comes out because it's already covered in House Bill 94.
That is correct. And the last sentence, if the voter did not indicate affiliation with political party or group when registering to vote, the director shall provide the voter with the ballot offering the greatest range of candidates from different political parties and groups. This was an amendment made on the floor by Representative Cogden and Representative Guttenberg. And the I can't speak for the Senate, but this is the major difference between the Senate and House bills. And there was, I think, some opposition to this. Lieutenant Governor also opposes the language. Representative Coghill is amenable to it coming out of the bill. The division doesn't really want to have to interpret what this sentence means. We think it's more appropriate for the voter to indicate which ballot they want. And in your packets, you also have a copy of the Division of Elections policy that has been in effect since 2002.
All right. Does everyone have that? It's says State of Alaska, and it looks like this, and it's got the date on it. It's June 3rd, 02.
And what happens currently, if a person doesn't select a ballot or select an affiliation, excuse me, when they are requesting an absentee ballot, the division will attempt to contact them by either phone or by letter if there's time to ask them to select a ballot. And we believe the onus should be on that voter to select whatever ballot that they would like, that they're called for.
Yes, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, and Ms. Kreitzer, isn't there a subsequent legal case that gave further clarity to this issue, or am I mistaken about which ballots to be selected? Like it says here, there's six different ballots. Is that correct? Is there six ballots anymore?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, I'm going to defer to Whitney Brewster, the director of the Division of Elections, to this.
Thank you, Whitney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director for the Division of Elections. In the upcoming 2006 primary, there will be three ballot choices. There will be the Republican ballot. There will be the combined, and then there will be the ballot measures only ballot. So this particular policy will need to be updated for the upcoming election.
So, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, then if there's no indication of which ballot is to be selected by your application and you send them the ballot measure only ballot, or what are you going to do?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, the division will attempt to contact the individual by mail. If there is no response, the division will attempt to call them. There is a place on the application for an individual to put their contact information, their phone number or email. The division will make every attempt to contact that person. And if we do not receive a response, they will not be sent a ballot.
So Whitney, if somebody makes an application and they are a registered whatever, and they don't check that right box, you do send them. Okay, so you can check a box that says send me this ballot, but if you are a registered Republican or Democrat and you don't check that box, do you get the ballot automatically, or do you still have to call them back or get a hold of them?
Mr. Chairman, if that person is only eligible for one ballot, for instance, a Republican, they will receive only the Republican ballot.
They will receive that
whether or not they receive or whether or not they check the box or not. If they're only eligible for one ballot, they will receive that ballot. If they are eligible for multiple ballot types, then the division will need to have confirmation as to which ballot they would like.
But basically your principle is that it's not up to you to decide which ballot an individual gets. They need to it's their responsibility to let us know, let you know.
That's correct.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes, so the three ballots, go over them. There's the Republican ballot, there's the
combined
ballot.
And then there is a ballot measures only.
Ballot measures only. Okay. And in section four of the old bill, that complete section is removed.
That's correct. And for the record, Annette Craig, so that's correct. Senator.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. We met with Ms. Kreitzer yesterday, and perhaps I misunderstood, because I don't think that Whitney's saying exactly the same thing. If a person doesn't register in any way, I mean, doesn't specify which ballot they want, you're saying that they will get no ballot, or will they get the ballot measures only?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, this is the first year that we've had a ballot measures only ballot choice. So that is something that the division will need to address. That seems like a possible remedy.
So you would try to contact the person and find out if they wanted the Republican ballot or the combined ballot. But if you could not reach them, you might just go ahead and send them the ballot that has measures only on it. I guess I'm a little unclear as to how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Senator Bundy.
Mr. Chairman, well, that would seem inconsistent. If we're going to ask people to indicate what their preference is, then they'd have to indicate the ballot measures only for them to get that. If we're going to be consistent, that you have to provide some indication.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, the division would much prefer that the voters specify what ballot choice they would like. I believe that someone who did not specify a ballot choice when they were sent the measures only choice, they might be disappointed that there are no candidates on that.
Yeah, I think disappointed would be a mild way to put it. I think they would feel disenfranchised if they, I mean, admittedly, they have an obligation in their application, but if you just choose to send them that default ballot, if you will, I could see a court suit.
Representative Gardner has a follow-up on this.
Thank you. But by the same token, if somebody has requested an absentee ballot, and there are a lot of Alaskans who don't want to be forced to say what party or to select in any way, they simply say, I want a ballot, I think they'd feel awfully disenfranchised to get nothing.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes, please, sir.
This is Annette Kreitzer again for the record. We did have this conversation yesterday in Representative Gardner's office, and the director and I have had a short conversation about this, but it is my view that we've had a lawsuit over this. I mean, that's why we have initiatives on the primary ballot on their own separate ballot, as opposed to just being on the Republican and just being on combined ballot or whatever other ballot you have in the primary. And the purpose of that lawsuit was specifically that the voter didn't want to have to choose between the Republican ballot, the combined ballot, however many ballots there were that year, just to be able to vote on the initiatives. And so the court issued a TRO, a temporary restraining order, saying this person could vote just on the initiatives and didn't have to select candidates. And so for that reason, because of that court case, and I probably should have confirmed this with law before I came here today, but that to me says that a person who doesn't indicate on their absentee ballot application an affiliation with a party would still get the ballot measure. Because you don't have to be a member of a party or select a party's ballot to be able to vote on the initiative.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Roper first, and then Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kreitzer really answered my question, was where this measure-only issue came about. But it seems to me that the courts are here making law again, and I'm very disturbed that the courts are dictating that what ballots to be received when it should have been handled by a legislative action. I think that's really a usurpation of our power. That just dumbfounds me.
So state again, would you, Representative Roper, your position and how you think it should be?
I think the legislature by law should have directed the division on how to handle that incident, not the courts. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think it should have been a subject of public policy debate in the legislature, whether they should create an extraordinary ballot just for a person that objected to making a choice. I won't comment at this juncture what the right decision is, but That puts the division in a very difficult situation, I think.
Senator Bundy?
Just to clarify, when I apply for an absentee ballot, there will be three boxes of which I can check one. Republican, combined, issues only. Now, if I don't select any, you're still going to try to contact me and say, which one do I want?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And if you don't reach me, are you suggesting then you'll just send out the issues only?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, no, not. As we currently operate, we would not send them a ballot measures only.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the appropriate thing to do. It's no more appropriate to send issues only if you can't reach me than it would be to send combined or Republican or all three.
Senator Bundy, I just want to clarify that the division does not want to be in the position where it is guessing which ballot.
Yeah, and I think that's a wise position to take.
Okay, thank you for that comment. And Representative Olson.
What percentage of the ballots are going to be absentee this year, roughly? 20-30%?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, I can tell you in the primary for 2004, there were approximately 900 people who did not check a box.
Oh, no, but I'm looking for the total, and then I was going to back into that one.
Representative Olson, I don't have that figure in front of me.
But assuming we had 900, or follow-up, please. That would probably be what we'd be expecting this year. How come we have a zero fiscal note? It looks to me like there would be some labor on the phone calls and the letters on the follow-up on the people that don't have the box selected.
Through the chair, Representative Olson, the division is establishing an absentee office, a standalone office. It was currently within the director's office using Help America Vote Act federal funds that will allow the division to expand its absentee program. And this first year, it will be paid for out of federal funds.
Thanks.
So now remember where we are. What we are doing is taking out Section 4, and in fact saying that we now need to go to the policies of the division. And the policy of the division is lined out for us here pretty clearly. If you don't choose, you don't get a ballot. The division should not be in a position of choosing for you.
That's correct. If I might add a clarification, notwithstanding my opinion, I'm not the director of the Division of Elections. And what the director of the Division of Elections says is what the policy and the procedure of the division will be.
Further questions, comments, further?
Yes, I find that objectionable. I think that what we want to do is to encourage people to vote, as many people as possible. And there are people who don't want to give any more information than they absolutely have to anybody. They value their privacy. And I imagine there are plenty of people who will ask for an absentee ballot and provide their name and address and only enough information that's acquired to identify them, and they will expect to receive an absentee ballot. Now, if they don't want to say what party they are or what they don't want to in any way reveal their political leanings, I think that is their right, and they still need to get a ballot, even if it's only the issues ballot, the initiatives.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, first response, then I'll go to Representative Rockford.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I understand that if an individual wants their privacy protected, that is an issue. However, if they want that privacy protected, then they do have the ability to check that ballot measures only box. And if they don't check that ballot measures only box, the division has no way of knowing that individual wants their privacy protected.
And just clarification, that when you send in your absentee ballot, the portion that says which ballot you choose, or when you send in your absentee application, the portion which says which ballot you choose is not seen even by the postal clerks. Something in here says that will not be publicly available.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Rookberg.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with what Senator Bundy indicated should be the policy on the division as articulated by the division director. I do take exception to Representative Gardner's characterization. However, I appreciate her viewpoint, and I think in part it's maybe able to be at least ameliorated by making sure that the application for absentee ballot clearly indicates that if you do not make an indication, you will get no ballot at all in the primary. I mean, so I think that we can at least help voters understand. If they don't make a selection, they will not receive a ballot, so they're at least informed of that. I don't see anywhere on the, unless the policy portion, the PNP number AV14 is sent with the ballot, which I don't think it is, the application.
Mr. Chairman, you
then
may
they
have
won't know that.
Document that will help you. In your packets, you have, I believe, the State of Alaska absentee by mail ballot application.
Right.
And if you look at block number 13, it says for the August election only, these are your choices. Please see reverse side 8. And if you look at the directions under 8, it, the last sentence says, if you do not
know. Oh, I'm sorry. So I read block 13 on the cover, which says combined Republican ballot measures only. And now you see on the other side, we look at what?
Number 8, which are the directions for that.
Okay.
The last sentence says, if you do not make a selection, your application will be returned to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been around here long enough to know that we do things in bold font and enlarge things and notify people there. There might be a recommendation or just a suggestion to the division about how they might approach this issue.
I think it's a very good recommendation, and ballot application has to be changed anyway because it says 7 days. You're going to go to a 10-day. Has that been printed, or the 10-day one?
Mr. Chairman, no, the 10 days has not. Not until this legislation.
I think we have a recommendation that I certainly
agree
with.
Right now, I mean, just what Ms. Spencer just said, you had to follow the footnotes to find out what it said.
It should be very clear when you check one of those, that primary ballot. It seems to me it should be clear.
You've got warnings saying, right. You know, if you don't check a ballot, you don't get one.
Yeah. Just highlight that box.
Yeah, whatever, right.
Is that possible, or a recommendation that you could accept?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you. Just for clarification, could I have you just state exactly what we're agreeing to here?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we are agreeing to modify the existing form to make it more clear in 13 that an individual must check a primary election ballot in order to receive a ballot.
That seems clear to me and a reasonable thing to do. Any comments, further comments on that? All right, Annette, what have we not done?
Mr. Chairman, Annette Kreitzer again for the record. I think that's it. Those were the three major issues with this bill.
Just a couple of comments that I had on my notes. One is that there's some urgency here on the 7 days to 10 days, and we haven't talked about that as a group, but could you explain why you're requesting that you have the ballot 10 days prior to the election instead of 7.
Sure, and then I'll defer to Whitney for additional comments. But having gone through this with the division in the last election, the division, Annette Kreitzer again for the record, the division hired as many people as it could hire to process absentee ballot applications. And folks have to be supervised, it has to be in a secure area. And so we hired as many people as we could hire. And so that's not necessarily going to solve the problem. So what else do you have some flexibility with? And we looked at the law and realized that if we change this to 10 days, that would at least give the division more time with the number of people that it'll be able to hire to process absentee ballot applications to be able to complete this, that task. And the voter will have more certainty, I think, that within a 10-day time frame, the division can process all the absentee ballot applications that it receives. You may have something else to.
Thank you. Any comments or questions or thoughts on that issue? The other issue I had done was that the only thing the CS does that is before you now is to say free conference, which is us. And there's also a fiscal note that you have, which.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
You listed 5 here, but in your opening comments you said there were 6 issues we had to address.
Yeah, the 6th one is that I just added, I'm sorry I hadn't talked to you about earlier, but it's a fiscal note that we have in front of us. And there is no change. Any comments, Annette, on the fiscal note?
No, Mr. Chairman.
So that's all the issues that I thought we needed to discuss. Anything else that anyone wants to say?
Yeah, I'm still troubled, but that somebody who sends in a ballot application for an absentee ballot may not get one at all. We've had testimony about a temporary restraining order in a court case that said a person who doesn't indicate party affiliation should still get a ballot. And we have the Division of Elections saying if they don't select a ballot, they won't get one. I think it's wrong. I don't think we're complying with Representative Coghill's amendment, which specifically says the voter didn't indicate affiliation with a political party or group when registering to vote. The director shall provide the voter with a ballot offering the greatest range of candidates from different political parties and groups. We're saying they'll get nothing, in spite of an understanding that the division will make every effort to contact them and ask them which they want. I don't think this serves Alaskans well. I think it interferes with voting rights of individuals who have made the effort, even if they've not checked one box on their application. I think it's wrong.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
But I think we're clarifying that in 13 by saying that you must check one of these in order to get a ballot. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't there before. And
yes,
if they read that, then they have to check one to get that ballot. And that wasn't clarified. And I think that should be suffice for them to read that and understand that they have to check one in order to get that ballot.
It ameliorates it, but I don't think it corrects it.
I understand your point, but it truly does put the onus on the individual, on the voter, and not on the department, which should not be placed in the position of deciding which ballot you get. I think this is a step ahead.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be better to say if a party ballot is not selected, the voter will get ballot measures only. And say that in bold type there, and say if you want to vote for a candidate, you have to choose a slate.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Well, just that if someone, and knowing that mistakes can be made, really wanted a combined or a Republican ballot, then under your proposal, they would get disenfranchised. They would get something that they didn't want, even though they had they been paying attention, they'd have made a different selection, and that puts the division in the position of being mind readers. And you need to contact them back, and they get the application, they get contacted back. I think state has done due diligence at that point.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I for one have, I think, reflected the voters in my district by saying that I don't personally agree with the closed primary ballot selection process. I would prefer to see the open primary process. But having said that, Mr. Chairman, the law stipulates or states very clearly that is the rights. It's been litigated all the way to the United States Supreme Court. We have opted as a legislature to create a split ballot system in the primary, and that being the case, we need to adhere to it.
Thank you. Any further comments?
Just that I have to be in, Senator Hoffman has to be in finance in about 4 minutes, so I'd like to.
Well, you have your priorities, so are you willing to remove your objection then?
I have no objection.
I thought you did have an objection to whose? That was your objection. Do you remove your objection?
Yes, I do.
All right, we have before us then the CS, and roll call, please, on the, you need this.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Roper?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Chair Gary Stevens?
Yes. All right, thank you all very much. I appreciate the time. We're going to send this around to have all of you, if you would. Oh, Katrina?
Guys first.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. I appreciate your being here.